I just don't think the Patriots football part has anything to do with this.
You don't draw conclusions until you have all the information.
We want to take our time. We'll make a decision based off the facts that we've gathered.
Dale Arnold.
They got to manufacture offense. Just get it out of your mind right now. There's no fixing it.
Why don't the Navy come and drop ice in the warm water?
No!
Rich Key.
Chime that you're the only person who cares as much about Tennessee as you do.
But really, we got to talk about the actual greatest quarterback. The one true GOAT.
It is the Tennessee!
Dale and Keith, middays.
Oh, boy.
On the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Hour number two, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. You heard a little snippet of Teddy Bruschi in the open there.
Yes.
Bruschi was on with OMF yesterday. And suffice to say, he disagreed strongly with his former head coach.
I was so happy to hear Teddy Bruschi yesterday and to talk about this specifically because we were talking about the Belichick-Saban documentary that they did, and they were breaking it down, you know, all this different stuff. And one of the things that stood out to me, and I was like, it seems a little bit like revisionist history in a way, was the talk about the undefeated season, you know, that went awry.
And if you go back to 2007, while it was going on,
yeah,
Michael Gee writing in the Boston Herald at that point said, you know, maybe losing a game wouldn't be a bad thing, kind of take the pressure off. And kept kind of openly mocked for it.
Yeah, I hated that. I hated that. And that's even come up more recently. Like, they've obviously been good every single year, and there's always a chance if they get out to a hot start, or even in the preseason, right, there's been talks of, oh, look, they just got Gilmore, they just got Cooks, or whatever it might be. Wow, this team could run the table even this year when they got brought in Antonio Brown. Before you knew that everything that happened with him, he said, could they go undefeated? And there's always like one person in the group who's like, actually, it'd be better to take the pressure off if they were able to lose.
Well, that was what Michael Gee wrote.
I know, and he's wrong.
So the HBO special the other night, Belichick and Saban, The Art of Coaching, I had never heard Bill Belichick say this before, but he said this.
Well, you've had the one undefeated championship team, right?
One.
The rest of them, you lost a game. Right. And we had that in 07, you know, we're 18-0. And in retrospect, it might have been better for us had we lost one somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I had never
heard him say that.
He does straight up say, in retrospect.
Right.
But still,
looking back on it now.
Like, why? Why? Like, there's going to be pressure in the Super Bowl anyway, especially when they were such a big favorite. So even if the Patriots were 15-1 in that regular season, you don't think they would have been 14-point favorites in the Super Bowl or whatever
Probably.
It was? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there would have been a lot of pressure on you. And yes, sure, there's a little bit more on there. But for a lot of the guys on that team, they had already won before. Like, a bunch of those guys had Super Bowl rings, including, you know, the guy, Teddy Bruschi, who talked with OMF yesterday. But they had won before. So what sort of separates it? What's a little bit different? Oh, I don't know. Going down as the greatest team of all time, because that's what they would have done had they won that game.
So Bruschi on OMF yesterday was asked about what Belichick had said.
My immediate reaction was, you're wrong, Bill. You're wrong. I disagree. And I know what he was coming from in terms of to ultimately win the championship. That championship, would that have helped us? That is possibly, maybe yes, because of that one loss refocusing us. But you got to understand, the majority of the veteran players on that team already had three in their back pocket, and we didn't just want another championship; we wanted the championship. And we talked about that in captains' meetings, and we said, don't take us out, Bill, because we all know we don't talk about it, but what we want to achieve is we don't want to lose any of them. We want to shut everyone up because we got those three championships already. We just want to win the one that'll shut everyone up for the rest forever. And that's what we are trying to do. And I wouldn't change anything for the world, because that's what we had to go for, was going for the championship that would trump all of the others. And that's where we eventually failed, yes, but that was the goal.
That's a great answer. I mean, that's how I kind of view it, too. And you know, as Teddy was saying, he and a lot of the guys on that team had won before. Not everybody. Obviously, there was a couple of new guys there. You know, Junior Seau hadn't won with them. But there were a bunch of guys that had won. And now you're talking about all time. This is it would be the greatest team of all time. And, oh, by the way, you could shut up Mercury Morris. You could shut up all those idiots
Don
in the Dolphins.
Shula.
Who I don't think Belichick loves, by the way. I don't think that he's a big Don Shula guy. That's my thoughts. And you could overtake that. You could go down as the best team of all time. you know, as Teddy says, now, could they have refocused him a little bit more?
And to Belichick's point about in retrospect, I understand
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you went into the Super Bowl at 17-1 instead of 18-0.
What's the...
I just wonder,
is a difference. There is a difference.
There was more pressure, I think.
Yes, but you're still... You know, how many teams have done that? How many teams have won the Super Bowl with just one loss? I mean, you're still in a situation like the 85 Bears was one of those teams. They had one loss all year long. That's still in a different type of category, and you're talking about a great team. You're still a heavy favorite, and it's the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think all of a sudden there's no pressure on you now in the Super Bowl because you had lost a game before. Or now, do you think they would have taken the Giants more seriously? Like, now you're suggesting that they didn't take them seriously?
Well, if that was the game they lost.
Well, that's a good point. What if they lost to the Giants? But I think...
What if they had lost the last regular season game, and it was close? If they had lost that one, then I'm guessing you are laser-focused when you get to Glendale.
See, I do feel like they played games by the end, though, that were close, right? Was it Baltimore, Philly, and New York?
Rex Ryan timeout cost the Ravens a chance
exactly.
to win.
And those were all like 3-point games. So it's one thing if you said not only did they go undefeated, but they won every game by 28 and they didn't even know what it was like to play in a close game.
Yep.
Then you could sort of see it. That's sort of the argument that's actually coming up now in the NHL with the Tampa Bay Lightning. Was last year they had such a monster
lead. It was so easy.
They hadn't played a game that mattered forever, and then the playoffs come and they weren't prepared and they just got whooped. Whereas the Patriots at least did play some really competitive games. Even the playoff games that year, they didn't win by 40 points, like running away. They were closer games, and then now you had a chance. It was all right there. And again, it came down to a play. It came down to one of the craziest fluke plays I've ever seen in my entire life, and that was the difference. If it wasn't for that, we are talking about the greatest team of all time, and nobody would be able to take anything away from them until somebody else came along and went 19-0.
I loved Brewski's answer.
Yeah, that was perfect.
We didn't want a chance. And as he said, most of the veteran guys on that team already had 3 rings in their back pocket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They didn't want a championship. They wanted the championship.
Yeah. No, that is pretty cool. Because I was wondering if he was, again, you lose the game, and I didn't know if Brewski would answer it similar to Belichick, you know, and say, well, yeah, you know, and you know, in hindsight, had we lost, maybe things would have been easier, and you know, the pressure got to us or any of that. Like, no, he didn't go there. Like, listen, that was such a monster goal, and it would have separated things from the previous 3 Super Bowls that he and a lot of the other guys had won.
And to your point, going back to Tampa Bay last year, the one thing many people said is that the Tampa Bay Lightning hadn't faced any adversity all season long. They steamrolled the rest of the National Hockey League. Then they get into a playoff series with Carolina, and the first bit of adversity that they faced the whole year, they didn't know how to handle it. They didn't know what to do.
No, they didn't. Oh, Columbus, right? Wasn't it Columbus?
Columbus,
it was
right. Columbus.
But they just, and I know they had, Kucherov missed a game or whatever in there, but even still, if they lost the game later in the season, it didn't matter. Like, there was no playoff seeding. Like, they had clinched the spot so far out, and on top of that, they knew they were going to be home ice throughout. So it wasn't even, like, at least the Bruins and the Maple Leafs are kind of fighting, like, all right, well, who's gonna be the 2 seed? Like, that type of thing. They just played so many games where they were cruising. The Patriots did that for a while. Like, you go back, and they were dominating teams. They were covering the spread.
Oh, we were talking about them running up the scores.
It was like a real conversation. It's like, these are pros, but okay, people want to talk about running up the score. But then all of a sudden, it got a little bit tighter, and there were some really good close games. And that's why I think, because the Giants gave them a game, that should have been enough of a wake-up call. Like, that should have been enough of a, well, this team is legit. Like, forget what the spread is. Like, we're not, you know, great. Vegas thinks we're 14 points better than this team.
We played them. We know.
Yeah, and also the same thing happened in 0-1. The Patriots were on the flip side of that. They were, what, 17-point dogs, weren't they, to the Rams? So, and a lot
but
of those
played
guys
played them in the regular season.
And played them tough. And played them
and
close.
That said, hey, you know what? We can hang with these guys.
So there was just too many examples of them to know that this was going to be a close and competitive game. And I don't know. I really think had they lost a game in the regular season, they probably still lose in the Super Bowl. They still have the same pass rush, don't they? They still have all that stuff that was going on. I mean, that turned out a pretty damn good Giants team.
I think Teddy is one of the guys, and I referred to it last hour, one of the guys who's talked about how people who want to take credit away from the Patriots for championships, you know, look at Spygate, look at Deflategate and say, oh, yeah, but you didn't earn that. Teddy's one of those guys who I think has expressed that in the past.
Yeah, oh, he definitely has. And he knows that he is going to be one of the guys that just has to defend him, because he's up there and you look at, you know, on set and all the different shows that he's on. And at least now, you know, he's got Randy Moss up there who's played here and has so much respect for Belichick and for Brady and doing the Patriot stuff. But some of the other guys up there just can't stand it. And they lost to him so many times. And think about some of the guys on set there with Teddy that he works with at ESPN probably would have won either more Super Bowls or at least more trips to Super Bowls or whatever had it not been for the Patriots. So, yeah, he has to stick up for them, because anytime something like this comes up, Spygate 2, well, they're just going to go back to all the same stuff and say, well, that explains the Patriots' 6 Super Bowls. It's not because they're better than everybody else. It's because they were cheating, even though, again, the stuff they've gotten them for is all stuff that we assume other teams are doing in some way or form anyway.
And it's... I am not one of those people who advocates, well, if you're not cheating, you're not trying stuff.
Yeah, I do like that.
I understand.
I'm okay with that.
I'm not one of those.
No, I understand.
I mean, I think that the Patriots are just, and by the way, since Deflategate 1,
yeah,
I don't think they've done anything. Sorry, call me naive if you want to. I don't think they haven't combed through garbage cans. They haven't swept opposing players' hotel rooms.
What about that guy?
Haven't done the helicopter. Haven't done any of that stuff.
All right. You don't think they're tapping in the opposing locker rooms?
I don't.
Okay.
But you know what? All they need is to have the other team think they're doing that
and they
stuff.
Do. They're already in their heads. And I think, do you think that's more of a Belichick thing or just the Patriots in general? Meaning in 5 years from now, actually Belichick might still be here, but say 10 years from now, are they going to still say, wow, it's the Patriots they're doing this? Or is it like a Belichick mastermind thing?
Belichick.
That's what I think too. Like, he could go coach somewhere else, and now teams
they'll think that team is cheating.
Yeah, they would be. He'd be in their heads, like, right away.
And it's, you know, and I know it's an old argument in these parts, and we've done it for years. You know, who's more important, Belichick or Brady? Right now, first of all, I'd say Belichick, because I think his career is going to last longer than Brady's.
Yes.
But I also think he has that effect. They're almost beaten before they even begin the week of game prep.
Well, and I think we see it on a weekly basis now, too. The gap between Belichick and the next head coach, and take it for all the different things, right? Just sort of the aura around him and how he freaks out opponents all the time. But just Belichick and whoever the second best coach is compared to Brady and the quarterbacks. And right now, Brady's not even the best quarterback anymore. He's not even the second best quarterback anymore. So that gap is completely shrunk down, and it is Bill Belichick has become much more valuable at this point. But I mean, I think that was inevitable. You know, he's going to be able to just he's going to be able to coach longer than Brady's going to be able to play. Even if Brady continues to make it look ridiculous as he just, you know, goes on at 42, 43. But Belichick, who knows how long he's going to go?
I think we probably would acknowledge, most level-headed Patriots fans would acknowledge, that there's been a slippage in play.
Yeah.
For Tom Brady.
Yes.
That he's not the Tom Brady of old. He's 42 years old. Why would he be?
Right.
So there's a guy by the name of Scott Barrett.
Scott Barrett?
Yeah.
This is one of these Shime stats.
Pro Football Focus.
Did you send me the other day Dakota stats? Was that you?
I sure did.
Shime comes up with more stats that I even know what to do with. So, yeah, what's the Scott Barrett stats?
So, Scott Barrett, Pro Football Focus,
okay,
has listed the top 7 quarterbacks by net yards per drop back.
So all right, let me stop you right there.
I know.
What the hell?
So, this includes passing yards and or rushing yards, and also accounts for possible sack yards.
All right, so
let's be honest. There's one reason and one reason only Shime sent this to us.
Well, I'll tell you.
No, there's two. There's two reasons.
And they're both at the top of this list.
No, one's at the top, one's at the bottom.
Oh, I thought you were saying one's at the top and one's second.
Oh,
the
no.
The top two guys on this list are your two binkies, aren't
they?
Yeah,
oh yeah. The number one reason I sent it is because of the top guy. The second reason is because the guy who's 31st out of 34 qualifying quarterbacks happens to be your quarterback in New England.
So again, now the formula for this geek stat.
Yeah, lay it
is
on me.
Passing yards.
Right.
Plus rushing yards. Minus sack yards lost.
And Brady does a good job. As bad as his line is, he doesn't take a lot of sacks.
He doesn't.
He gets rid of the ball a lot.
So number one on this list is Ryan Tannehill.
He's the number one on like every nerd stat list. Tannehill's killing it.
The top 7 in order are Tannehill, Lamar Jackson, Matthew Stafford.
Well, he's missed some games.
Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson, and Jimmy Garoppolo. So I'm already wondering how much do I care about this.
No, but I mean, those guys are all having good seasons, right?
Baker Mayfield.
No, where's he?
So the bottom seven. Number 28 is Daniel Jones. Number 29 is Andy Dalton. Number 30 is Ryan Fitzpatrick. Number 31 is Tom Brady.
Oh, boy.
32, Carson Wentz. 33, Mason Rudolph.
Yeah,
34, Mitchell Trubisky.
Trubisky. No matter what stat it is, Trubisky's at the bottom. No matter what.
Unless you ask Wiggy.
But Brady's down there, and that's why I keep going to, when we're talking about Brady and everybody makes excuses for him about the O-line sucks, and you're like, yeah, you're right. The O-line's been bad for a while. The weapons that he has are bad. I don't know if they're the worst in the league, like Peter King has told us in the past, but they're certainly not at the top. But we don't do that with every single team. And this, all these stats that include all 32, or I guess guys that qualify, 34 starting quarterbacks, when he is at the bottom of all of those, like, that's pretty eye-opening, right? Because who's Mitchell Trubisky throwing to, and who's Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing to, and who's Andy Dalton throwing to, and who's Daniel Jones throwing to? Like, those guys all have issues too. And is the Patriots offensive line the worst in the league? Like, I'm guessing there are worse offensive lines out there. Now, there are definitely better. I mean, there are 100% there's better ones. But it's hard to ignore all, like, because you can pull up a million different stats. You can go as simple as quarterback rating. You can go to Shime's Dakota rating, which is still a whole.
Ryan Tannehill, number one.
Tannehill's number one. Prove me wrong, nerd. So Tannehill's having a year, and Brady is not. That much is clear.
Now, he said he'll play until he sucks.
Yeah.
Do you think he thinks he sucks?
See, this
Or do you think he, laying there, you know, staring at the ceiling at night, is going, well, the offensive line isn't doing much. I don't really have any receivers.
Brady sucks.
We can't really run the football.
This really is unprecedented. Like, I couldn't have predicted this, because when Peyton Manning sucked, he sucked. You could see it. I could see it. And it was a physical thing. Everybody sucked. It was so clear. He got benched for Osweiler at one point. He threw a million picks in one game. He threw more picks than touchdowns. So he just straight up sucked. That one was easy. Brady, the numbers kind of tell you that he sucks, but I'm still not sure that he does.
Now,
I feel like
Wiggy
talked
to us yesterday about the eyeball test.
Eyeball test is a classic one.
The eyeball. Now, we've been saying all season long, he's throwing balls to places. You wonder what he's doing.
Yeah.
We always blame the wide receivers.
But I can't tell if I am just Patriot fan who has watched Tom Brady play for more than half of my life, and I just view him and I say, well, there's no way he sucks. He could never suck. He can't suck. And, well, he had Marshall Newhouse blocking for him. And, oh, he's trying to throw to Mohamed Sanu. And all that. Like, or do you have to face facts, and does he suck? And that's why the question you asked is the right one. What does Brady actually think?
In his heart of hearts, you know, does he, and now my guess is he feels, I'm throwing the ball fine. I've got my arm strength is still there.
Yeah, I think he doesn't think that he sucks. And part of it is when a few weeks ago when it was sad Tom Brady, and Greg Hill says to him, well, you're probably frustrated with yourself.
Right.
And he said, well, I'm frustrated with the offense.
Yeah.
And that to me was
telling. He didn't fall on the sword.
Right. Not in that case. So that to me was pretty telling. And that's why I think he believes he still has something left in the tank, and it just needs to be with a better supporting cast than this. Shime has just handed us a science project.
It's like a Rorschach test.
I mean, this thing is
I see a butterfly.
So Shime just...
Yes, science!
Thank you, Jesse. It's just graphs and charts, and I'm like, I haven't
so
been...
So it's the... CPOE plus EPA index.
When you have like a big...
Pass block, win rate.
Square, yeah. And then there's just dots everywhere. I like the one, did you see the one that he handed us one time that had like little characters, like the faces of all the quarterbacks, and they're just like strewn about
their
on this graph?
Throughout the season.
So Shime's in there with his TI-83 calculator, and he's just punching up all these different things, and he's like, here we go.
Well, this one specifically is quarterback efficiency
versus
pass protection.
Let's try to do it in English, okay, Shime, because it gives everybody a
quarterback
popsicle headache.
So how good the quarterback has been compared to his pass protection.
By the way, look at shocking who's at the top of the graph.
Tannehill
also has great pass protection, though. Like, that's the thing. Look at Tom Brady, who has below average pass protection on this graph. But he's also not producing nearly as well as a lot of guys who have equally bad.
So can you
protection.
Tweet out this graph?
Yeah, 100%.
From Dale Keefe,
really?
WEI, so you can see it. Yes, Dale, just so people
I'm gonna
know
send
what we're
this,
doing.
I'm going to send this to my kid. You know, good. The PhD stats guy from, from the University of Richmond is going to look at this and say, I can't understand any of this.
So there's a horizontal line on this chart. There's also a vertical one, which we'll get to, but there's a horizontal line. If you are below it, that means your offensive line sucks. And if you're above it, it means it's good.
No, so the offensive line
I can't even figure it out.
Offensive line, if you're to the left, is good.
All right, so the back to the vertical
right
line
is bad.
The aforementioned
vertical line is if you're up, you're more efficient. If you're down, you're less efficient.
Wait a minute. So if your pass protection stinks, it's on the left?
Correct. No, it's on the right.
Oh, God.
See Dr. Maliki and the
you can see the arrows on the right-hand side.
So
let's figure this out. The two worst quarterbacks, based on Shime's pie chart here, are Ryan Fitzpatrick and Andy Dalton.
Dale, if it was a pie chart, I'd be able to figure it out. Yeah. I don't know what this is. Yo, so Fitzpatrick and Dalton, Fitzpatrick and Dalton suck, but they also have bad offensive lines. So his point is Daniel Jones, Marcus Mariota, Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky are really bad because their offensive line actually is decent and they suck. Is that correct?
Correct.
Am I reading that right?
And a guy like Russell Wilson, whose pass protection is awful, is exceeding anything you would expect because his efficiency is so high.
Yes.
Can we make sure we
Yes, now we're getting it.
Let's not send this to Tom Brady.
No. No, because his offensive line, it says here, is bad, but not the worst. There's a lot of guys with worse off pass protection. But according to this chart, Bridgewater, Goff, Minshew, Flacco, Wilson, Ryan, Kyle Allen, Fitzpatrick, Dalton all have worse offensive lines. Am I reading that right?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, like bottom half, but not, you know, in the toilet there. Did we learn something here, folks?
Did
we
learn anything? Tom Brady not playing well, still getting halfway decent pass protection.
Yeah, okay, that maybe we should have led with that.
Yeah, but who have they played?
Oh, don't do that.
What's the Dakota score?
All right.
We'll do that next.
We'll tweet it out.
Tom Brady's like 25th.
Good luck trying to figure it all out.
Thanks, Shime.
617-779-7937 is the telephone number. We'll get Peter King's take on Spygate 2, what possible punishment the Patriots may face, if at all. We'll see what he says from a national perspective. Then we'll get back to your calls in just a few minutes. Dale and Keefe.
Now back to Dale and Keefe on the WEEI Sports Radio Network.
Joining us on the Harbor One Bank Hotline is Peter King from Football Morning in America. Peter, brought to you by Needham Bank. Can we be your bank? And by Elizabeth Grady. .com. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Dale. Hope you feel better.
Yeah. Thankfully, I feel better than I sound. Thank goodness. What's your take from afar on the Spygate 2 story, what happened in Cleveland last Sunday involving the Patriots?
Well, my initial take is it sounds like it is a little bit of a Keystone Cops episode by some team employees that probably didn't know that they were doing something wrong. And that's my initial take. But I do believe that, and I don't care what team was doing this, I do believe that this has to be looked at and investigated seriously. And again, regardless of whatever team does this, and I know everybody says, the Patriots are at it again. I wouldn't care who is doing this. If somebody has allegedly 8 minutes of sideline footage, I would want to know exactly why they were looking at the sidelines for that period of time. On the other hand, I would also say that I would find it pretty surprising if there was any plan to do something nefarious in plain sight with however many people are in the press box that day, 200, 250 people, getting credentialed by an NFL team to do this. It just seems totally illogical. But again, I'd like to wait and see what the investigation shows.
And as for punishment, Peter, wouldn't you have to say that the Patriots' history would factor in there compared to another team? And even if,
Rich, if there's something, if they can trace John Doe or whoever these employees are to, that they have been trained to do, nefarious things, Well, obviously, the NFL would have to come down hard, and I would think harder because it's the Patriots and because of, you know, the history going back to, 12 years. And so, but again, I think that this really does not pass the sniff test to me. But look, I had one head coach this week say to me, because I basically gave the opinion that I'm giving you right now, and we were exchanging some text messages, and he said, hey, listen, we are always told that the head coach is responsible for what happens in his program. And so he said, I don't know what happened, but if the sideline video is being taken, then that has to reflect on the head coach no matter how it happened. And there are going to be some people, regardless what the decision is by Troy Vincent in the league and ultimately by Roger Goodell, there are going to be some people who are going to be unhappy with whatever happens.
Yeah, even if they only find that it was, a one-off and it was a mistake by somebody who really didn't know what they were doing, could the Patriots still look at a loss of a draft pick, maybe like a late-round draft pick?
Rich, I don't know.
Yeah.
That would be an absolute wild guess on my part. I don't know. I can't imagine that it would be I was thinking before that it might be some fine, some kind of significant fine. But who knows? Maybe it is a sixth round pick. I just don't know. Because I really don't know what is on the tape, and I don't know what's going to be said when the league interviews it, maybe they already have interviewed the Patriot employees involved.
The reports out of Foxborough is that there is no one who was madder, who was more upset by all of this than Bill Belichick.
Wouldn't surprise me at all, because you have enough trouble getting your team ready to play, particularly in a season like this where they simply cannot find enough answers on offense to get their team going. So now this is sort of, if indeed that it is an absolutely innocent thing, now you have Bill Belichick basically in the middle of preparing for a game, finding out something that regardless of the outcome of it is going to take up some brain space and some time in his life, and that's going to be a maelstrom on the outside. It's just something that he doesn't need, and they certainly don't need.
The Patriots offense has struggled for a little while, but after the Chiefs game, really one of the big topics for the first couple of days, Peter, was the officiating, and there were three huge plays that were just missed. And who knows if it determines the outcome of the game or not, but they were just huge plays that were missed. You could see them clearly on replay. The league has started to talk a little bit more about this. What type of change, or first of all, how big of a problem do you think overall across the league the officiating has been this year? And then what kind of steps do you see them taking to try to correct it?
I don't think officiating overall is any worse this year than it has been, because I think if you look back November, December, every year, I don't know how it would be possible to do a Google search of that, but the officiating has been in crisis every year probably that I've covered the NFL. And I think even more so this year, because they did something that I consider now to be truly dumb, which is they passed a rule in March that they chose for whatever reason to not enforce once the season started. And so once that happened, and now by the looks of the ruling in the Jets Miami game last week, that they may be starting to enforce it now for whatever reason. This is a self-inflicted wound, that part of it. But let's talk about the officiating last week. Here's the thing that, first of all, because two of the plays happened on the same drive, okay, that the Patriots ended up settling for a field goal for, the difference in that drive, in those two plays, other than a couple of minutes of time on the clock, let's say, that the Patriots would have had because it wouldn't have taken them so long to go down and settle for that field goal. If you look at those two plays, So those two plays basically, you could argue took a touchdown away from the Patriots. So you can only take one touchdown away.
Well, four points, really, Peter. All right. I mean, I'm with you.
Either 3, 4, or 5 points.
Yeah.
Because they might have, you can't absolutely assume
Sure. They're
probably only going to kick the extra point. But anyway, so let's say 4 points. So that wouldn't have cost them the game. Here's the thing that is maddening about that play. You had the official about, I'm talking about the N'Keal Harry when he didn't step out of bounds.
Right.
And they ruled Right. That he stepped out of bounds. The officials, you ask any person who is officiated in the NFL, and I bet going down to high school football, and you know what the mantra is? You have to officiate only what you see. Never assume anything, okay? The guy on the goal line, and I don't have the story in front of me, those two officials are my go-to of the week in my column this week, but the guy at the goal line assumed that N'Keal Harry stepped out of bounds. That would be absolutely maddening to me, and to the point where I'm serious. I would not want that guy officiating in the NFL. Because if that's going to happen once, I don't care how big the moment was. I don't care if this is in a first pre. I don't care if this is in the Hall of Fame game. I don't care. You cannot have an official on your staff who officiates because I think I saw something. That just drove me crazy last week.
Within hours of the Patriots-Cowboys game, the NFL came out with a statement and said that there were two tripping penalties which were improperly assessed in that game. I haven't heard a word about Jerome Boger's crew yet.
I mean, what is the NFL going to say? The NFL is going to say the guy blew it at the goal line, which they should do, and they should never have blown that whistle. I will say this about the whistle. Okay, I was talking to Dean Blandino on his podcast this week. And I said to him, I cannot get nearly as mad about the inadvertent whistle as I can about the play, the N'Keal Harry play. That every time I think about it, it just makes me just furious. But the play on, the quick whistle play, that the ball was shielded so well. When the ball carrier went down, and then when Travis Kelce went down on that play, I would have watched that in real time 10 out of 10 and said he was down. Now, is that an excuse? No, but I have a little bit of an understanding about why that happened. I have no understanding about why the N'Keal Harry play was not a touchdown.
The league is coming up with their top 100 players for the celebration of the 100 years of the NFL, and they recently had their 12 finalists for tight end. They're going to whittle that number down to 5. Gronk is on the top 12. For you, would he be in the top 5 all-time tight ends?
Well, he was. I was one of the 25 voters on the panel. He absolutely was among my top 5. We didn't have to vote in order, which I was happy about because I can't tell you if it came down to, so are you voting Gronk third or Ditka third? I don't know. I mean, do you like vanilla ice cream or do you like Rocky Road? But I definitely think he belongs. I hope he gets in. I think that he was the most important and most consistent weapon of the Patriots Super Bowl era, even though he only played for half the time. And again, obviously Tom Brady is the,
right.
is the most, I'm talking about,
yeah.
other than Brady, I think that he was the most dangerous and consistently hard to stop player for the longest period of time. I mean, for 1 year it was Randy Moss, obviously, but to me, I just think he separated himself from every other great tight end of the last 10 years. I hope he makes it. I think he's well-deserving.
Peter, we appreciate the time. As always, we'll talk to you next week.
All the best. Get well, Dale.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
Peter King, Football Morning in America, joining us. We'll get back to the calls with you at 617-779-7937. Text line is 37937. We've got a bunch of stuff that we've got to get to between now and 2 o'clock. It's Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio WEEI.
Now back to Dale and Keith, WEEI.
So more news coming out of the Major League Baseball winter meetings. This one, just they put out a release today. The headline is MLB and MLBPA agree to changes to joint drug program.
Okay.
One of the paragraphs here says, and I'm quoting, natural cannabinoids.
Oh, boy.
In effect, THC, CBD, and marijuana will be removed from the program's list of drugs of abuse.
Smoke them if you got them.
Going forward, marijuana-related conduct will be treated the same as alcohol-related conduct under the party's joint treatment program.
Moderation, moderation, moderation.
So,
you have a bunch of high
baseball. You can just call me Mr. Recovery.
Yeah, bring it on. Major League Baseball, open mind. Good for them.
CBD is perfectly valid now for Major League Baseball. Marijuana is perfectly valid now.
It's legal in how many states now? I mean, it definitely makes sense that these leagues are starting to smarten up. And maybe this in the offseason, football will address
it. I would guess
it.
That football will do the exact same thing.
I think they would. But for baseball, which we know it isn't always wild about change, you know, they're kind of set in their ways, to say the least. That's a good sign, I think, for them. Makes all the sense in the world to do that.
And by the way, the other thing that they've talked about for the upcoming season is a minimum of 3 hitters for relief pitchers.
I hate that, because now you're getting involved in the strategy of the game, right? So now you're telling your manager that this guy, maybe he's a lefty specialist, too bad. Like, now you have to go and face those other two guys. And is that really what is slowing down the game, is pitching changes? Or is it the pitcher taking forever? Is it the hitter taking forever? Is it timeout? Yeah. Like, hey, I just hit a double, timeout. I got to go bring all of my equipment over to the base coach. Is it all that stuff that slows it down? Because I still think that's one where people are like, oh, another pitching change. You know, here comes all the time. They have to burn that player. It's not like he can come back in. Yeah. It's one thing if the lefty specialist goes out there, gets one guy, and then 2 innings later you bring him back. You can't do it. So I hate that part of it, because, again, you're manipulating the game too much. I'm all for changes in baseball. If you want to change it, you want to speed things up, you want to do certain things like pitch clock, I'm in favor of. But making a reliever, what, he goes home run, the guy clearly doesn't have
it. He gets another one.
Hey, get another guy. You get him. Like, no. Because sometimes, especially with relievers, you know, I think even Kimbrel is an example, although Kimbrel would get more hitters because he was the closer. But there were certain guys that they would trot him out there, and you could just tell. Doesn't have it, right? Like, they just can't find the strike zone that day. So now walk a guy. Most managers would say, all right, I'm gonna go take him out. Nope. You gotta make him pitch again. I think that's, I hope they don't go through with that. That one seems stupid.
One of the things we mentioned with Peter King, and I'm dead serious when I talk about this, within hours of the Patriots Cowboys game, the NFL came out and said, hey, a couple of tripping penalties called against the Cowboys shouldn't have been called, just so you know. Have they said anything?
I haven't seen it,
about what we saw here on Sunday?
And I have been on the internet off and on since the game. I've been checking out the internet. I've been refreshing the internet. I have not seen a peep. And those ones, you know what? You don't even have to do all of them, right? You could say, hey, we shouldn't have blown down the Gilmore fumble recovery. We should. N'Keal Harry was inbounds, and Philip Dorsett, there was pass interference. The pass interference one has been such a hot debate over the year, and there for a while there was no overturns. Then more recently, there's been more. But if you want to forget that one, then I guess fine. But like the out of bounds one, we all saw it. It really wasn't that close, especially as far as like out of bounds replays are concerned. Usually, like, you slow it down. You're like, is there a little bit of room there? Nope, that one was easy to see in real time.
And does the NFL think that we will all forget about it?
Well, because you will, because Spygate 2 is going on. You got to talk about that.
Maybe they're hot counting
on. The Ravens are playing tonight.
That's why they're going to drag Spygate 2 out, right?
Yeah, but I'm with Peter King in the sense that what's an apology really going to do? Or what's even an admission? What's it really going to do?
It's not going to do anything except it will acknowledge that they know they screwed up.
So I think,
why did they come out with the release after the Dallas game?
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't have done that either. I mean, Jerry Jones demanded it. I don't know. But I think the way that you prove that you knew was that those refs don't get a playoff game this year and maybe never get a playoff game again. And if you're thinking about replacing refs with, you know, these up-and-coming referees, maybe they take their job. I don't need the apology after the game. I need to just make sure that they don't do any more Pats games.
I don't know which official back judge, side judge, whoever that guy was. Peter King thinks he should be fired.
Yeah, oh yeah, he was calling for that guy's job right away. I mean, that whole crew, they should be like, you know how CBS and Fox have like the D or the E team that do like the fifth game? Yeah. They should go to those games. You get all the Cincinnati, Miami games for a while.
Peter's on the truck phone. Hey, Peter.
How you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Is this Dale and Keith?
Yes,
you better
sir.
Believe it, Peter.
How you doing, guys?
Very well.
Very well. You guys have been talking a lot about N'Keal Harry all morning at that play, right?
Yep.
And I heard Peter King on there as well. And I think I have a fairly simple and obvious solution to the problem there.
Okay.
I mean, you know how they review every single touchdown, right?
That's yes. called? All scoring plays okay. are reviewed, yes.
All scoring plays are reviewed. Now, if you do the opposite, when it looks like a scoring play, but they call it not a scoring play, such as the one N'Keal Harry did,
yeah,
why not review those the same way?
They should.
Then you would have obviously. I mean, it'd take 5 minutes, and
you do it one better, Peter. What you should have done, and then you don't even have to change the rule. Is if you're not sure, you call it a touchdown, knowing that it's going to get reviewed. That's what you should have done. But I'm with you. If it's one of those plays also, that's like that, then why not review it? It's a scoring play. It could be a scoring play.
And there's also a way to save time on that as well, because if a guy is 40 yards out and he runs it straight to the end zone, right past the end zone, nobody touches him, you don't have to review that one.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
The guy walks in the end zone like nothing and they still review it. That takes time too. A couple seconds, but you save on the easy ones. And then, I mean, when are you going to draw the line, I guess? But
I mean, I understand that you're making a call, you know, spur of the moment. But I think Rich's point is the perfect one here. Just call it a score.
It's easy.
And you know what? If they go back and say, no, he stepped on the line. Okay,
fine.
Sorry.
We saw that happen a couple times. Was it James White? They called it a score. He was down at like the half-yard line. Or like there are certain plays this year that we've seen. And fine, you're better off going that way. The team doesn't need to burn a challenge. And you review it because you review all of them anyway. Now, usually it's no-brainer and you don't even think about it. And it's just, all right, that's a touchdown. Okay, line up the extra point. But sometimes there's, all right, hold on, wait a minute. This one's close. We got to look at it. Just like you should have had with Harry's touchdown.
617-779-7937. You've got a hole in the Red Sox pitching rotation for next year.
Yeah, they're screwed.
Mock it if you will.
They're screwed.
But I've got a question for you. We'll ask it when we come back. Dale and Keefe, Sports Radio, WEEI.